John Adams remarked that there are two ways to enslave a nation. One is with the sword, the other is with debt. Americans are surely awash in debt. My guest, Ellen Brown, authored the runaway bestseller, Web of Debt. Her book challenges widely held beliefs about our economy and our freedom. In essence, a handful of king bankers control it all. We explore how private parties, not our government, control America's money supply. Banking in America has become a cruel hoax acting as a giant betting machine. Still, there is a path to prosperity and freedom, argues Ms. Brown. It is my pleasure to welcome Web of Debt author Ms. Ellen Brown to Moral Politics. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you, Bill.
Now, you have in the title of your book, Web. What were you conveying by that? Are there spiders in an economic sense attacking us?
The spider, the web, is actually something that we're all trapped in. And what's interesting is that everyone is trapped in it, not just us as individuals, but governments. Most people think governments issue our money. If they issue money, why are they in debt? They don't issue the money. It comes from a private banking cartel, actually.
But this goes to the fact that most Americans really don't understand American banking, do they?
No, and in fact, bankers themselves don't necessarily understand how they create money, and they'll argue with you that they don't, but they do.
Now, is this a part of a deliberate ruse? You said that we've got a cruel hoax going. Is this part of that hoax? Is that it's been made deliberately complicated when it's really not?
Certainly at some stage that would be true, but I think now it's been so obscured in the thicket of misinformation. And
how is America's money made?
The money that's made by the government is coins, but that's only 1/10,000th of the money supply. The Constitution...
1/10,000th of the
right,
money
it's
supply.
Like almost nothing. It's
$1 billion.
Yeah. The Constitution says Congress shall have the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof, and that is all that Congress does, the coins. And all of the rest, including the dollar bills, which are what we also think of as money, are issued by banks. The dollar bills are issued by the Federal Reserve, but it is actually private. It's composed of 12 branches. If you look at your dollar bill, you can tell which branch issued the bill, so it's actually issued by the branches. All those branches are owned by the banks in their district only. The government does not own one share of one federal district.
So before it was even popular, we've been outsourcing our economic most essential function, the money supply, to private interests.
Exactly.
Now this is a widely held misconception. People don't know that basically banks just poof, create money.
Right. Well, they create it as credit. In other words, when you go to a bank to take out a loan, the bank will write into your account the amount of money that you want. But they don't pull that from anywhere. That's just a debit on one side of their books and a credit on the other. They do it by double entry bookkeeping. They only need the deposits when they go to clear the check. And then as the check goes out, you know, they need to balance their books. So they have to have as much going out as coming in. But they don't really lend the deposit. They borrow from that deposit pool, but the deposits are always there. If you, the depositor, go in to get your money, the bank never says, come back in 30 years because we just lent your money to Mr. Smith. It's been lent out, and yet you have access to it.
Now, what you just described, this lending, this bringing money into creation, poof, out of thin air, double entry accounting where there's an asset balancing a liability, is the bulk of the American money supply.
Right.
This is why people can have valuations on their homes, but there's really not enough money to sustain all of that valuation, is there?
Right. But actually, it's good to have so much credit out there. I mean, when the credit system collapses, that's when we have a depression, such as we have right now.
And what you described is indeed the fractional banking system. Is that correct?
Right.
Right. And the unfortunate thing is that this could, if not controlled, lead to inflation.
Really what inflation comes from, when you create a loan and it's backed by a piece of real estate, that loan will get paid off. So that is not necessarily inflationary. What does inflate the system is when bankers speculate, they're creating money that they're using for money-making money.
Becoming a casino, a betting machine, as we've seen recently. How about the role of central banking? Was that done to protect the economy in some sense?
In theory, what you have here is this basically a shell game going on by the bankers, which is how money is created. It's not necessarily a bad system, as I will argue. I mean, if it were public, it would be a good system. But because it's private, and there's this conception that money is a thing, like gold, the bankers never had enough gold to create all these loans, so they had to fabricate. So there's a certain fraud involved. So to keep this fraud up, to keep the ruse, the shell game going, the central banks were set up, which had the function of printing money or creating money to backstop the banks. But now they're sort of blocked from doing that as well. Like, look at the EU.
So seeing the problem of their own making, they created a solution of their own making that allows the same problem to perpetuate, which is the Fed, which is, in your book, you mentioned that it's neither federal nor are there any reserves in the Federal Reserve. So they create this entity that is, as you're describing, a shell game. Are we headed for disaster? I think so.
Well, there are ways out, which, and I think we're kind of finding our way to those ways. Like, look at the EU, that's an unsustainable system, but they are starting to create money because that's what they have to do. There has to be a release valve to allow this system to expand.
Did Franklin Roosevelt take us off the gold standard because he was aware of what you just described?
He took us off the gold standard because he had no choice. At that time, everyone was afraid of the banks, so they were rushing to the banks to pull out their gold. Well, the dollar was 40% backed by gold. So you could take your dollars in. If you took $2, paper dollars in, and took $2 worth of gold out, $3 would have to be called in the way of loans. So the money supply was just contracting and contracting. And so we had a huge depression. So in order to stop this implosion of the money system, he took the dollar off the gold standard.
And that's not a solution for us either, is it? Going back on a gold or a silver standard or any kind
No.
of commodity-based standard, is it?
No, it's never worked in the past, despite what gold bugs will say.
The Federal Reserve System is made up of private banks serving private interest.
True, although you could argue the Federal Reserve Board is a different thing than the Federal Reserve banks. The Federal Reserve branches are all 100% private. The Federal Reserve Board is appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate, so it's definitely got a federal component to it.
We know about Andy Jackson taking on the second Bank of America, and I believe the name Biddle was popular at that time, opposing his effort.
Biddle was the head of the second U.S. bank, which was quite corrupt. He said, "I will kill it before the bank kills me," which he did. He did. He killed the bank, pulled all the money out. That's the last time that the debt has been fully paid off.
Now we have Lincoln and the greenback. Can you describe that? That's another.
Lincoln went back to the American system. In other words,
This is the system that was popularized by Ben Franklin.
He wrote about it. He didn't actually invent it, but he wrote about it. It was actually the Quakers in Pennsylvania that developed the best of these models. Lincoln was faced with usurious interest rates in order to fund the Civil War, and in fact, there is some evidence that the Rothschild bankers were that they actually stimulated this war in order to trap the colonies back in debt, in order to have economic colonialism where they had lost their political colonies. So to avoid these very high interest rates, he issued U.S. notes or greenbacks and did manage to win the war and did a lot of development besides the railroads that went all the way across the country. So it was a very active period of development. But he was assassinated, and that whole thing
And
was
then the
terminated.
private bankers
He got back home.
reclaimed our American banking system. Now, you mentioned Rothschild. Everybody knows that name. And what's interesting in your book is that, and it was a shocker to me, I didn't know that Rockefeller was so intimate in early American banking, along with the Morgan, J.P. Morgan, and the House of Morgan. And there's another name that people probably don't know, Aldrich, who was the grandfather of Nelson Rockefeller, vice president under Jerry Ford,
mm-hmm.
Very powerful man. Wasn't it Aldrich who linked up with the Rothschilds?
Aldrich brought the first Federal Reserve bill, and it was called the Aldrich Bill, and he was a relative. And Rockefeller and Morgan both were funded by the Rothschild. I mean, there is evidence that they were both funded by the Rothschild bankers. So Rothschild, of course, was Jewish, and at that time that was that impaired his ability to deal with. So Morgan was a good Protestant front for him. And
influenced by the Rothschilds still continue in the American banking system?
It's hard to know who the head of the SPDR is now. It is said that the SPDR moved across the Atlantic to the Rockefellers, that the American banking system is now stronger than the City of London, but I doubt it. I mean, I think that it all still goes back to the City of London.
Well, there is a need to expand the economy. We certainly don't want it to implode by not having productive lending. I guess that's the important term, productive lending. How would you describe a productive loan?
Well, my own solution to all this would be that the banks would be publicly owned. So lending is a good thing. And in fact, all of our money comes from loans, virtually all of it. And it is a very natural organic system. In other words, people take out loans when they want to do something, build something or whatever, and then they pay as they pay the loan off, the money supply contracts again. So the money supply expands and contracts naturally in response to the need for credit. So that's a good thing. The only bad thing about the system is that it's privately owned by bankers pretending to have money they don't have. So not only is that bad in the sense that it gives a certain cartel power over the whole money scheme, but it's bad for the bankers themselves because they're always getting into trouble. I mean, historically, this system goes back for 1,000 years, and in fact, when they were really strict about in the Italian bankers, there was one Italian banker who was actually beheaded in front of his bank because he couldn't balance his books.
If only we could do that again.
I know.
Now, there's a role of interest.
Interest could be part of a sustainable system. If it's a public system. In fact, there are many money reformers who will argue that the debt virus theory has been debunked. And so their argument is, well, the bankers put the interest back into the system. They buy shoes and they buy food and they spend like everybody else. They spend their profits. But the problem is they don't. It's the 1% versus the 99% thing. They reinvest their profits. They have far more money than they can spend. Mm-hmm. And so not counting this issue, this mathematical issue of you've got to have an expanding debt in order to pay the interest, they put their money into investments. So instead of saying, here's my dollar, give me some food, they say, here's my dollar, give it back to me with interest, or give it back to me with more profit. It's not really just interest, it's any form of rentier money-making money that is this parasite that's pulling the money off the top, and that's why the 1%...
This is the basis of the Ponzi scheme that you talk about, the fact that money is created, but only the principal is created, not the interest for that principal. That it's never created, so it depends on further lending.
System where the government itself is able to print some money, they can print the interest, so they can put some debt-free money into the system to cover the interest. But a bank can't because all their money goes out there as interest-bearing debt.
Well, we know on the basis of households is clear, but on the basis of the national economy, is it clear that we will reach a time where we cannot service our debt? The interest will prevent us from, we can't even service the interest on the debt.
Yeah, well, that would be true. If we were still paying 5% interest like we did at one time, we would already be at the point where we couldn't afford the interest. But in fact, that's why interest rates have been dropped so low. They're down to like 0.2% for the Fed funds rate. They're almost nothing, and they have to hold them ridiculously low because the federal debt has grown by 50% since this banking collapse. But you could service the debt. I mean, if you borrowed from your own central bank interest-free, then it doesn't really matter the size of the debt. You just keep rolling over the debt It's the interest that'll kill you.
So you're saying there's some artificiality that is holding or suppressing our interest, keeping it at near zero levels, so basically the government doesn't suffer a calamity.
Yeah, as long as, if you could have zero interest, the government debt can respond to the needs of the economy, which
but
I think is a good thing.
Zero interest is not sustainable, I mean, is it? Aren't we basically just...
Well, zero interest means borrowing from the Fed, and they return the money.
Good point. Some of what we talked about, deflation, the fact that things are contracting. We're not seeing lending. We don't see the productive activity. Even though there is a need for it, we don't see it. In fact, many people that have written in Forbes, that have been on Charlie Rose, there's a hedge fund multi-billionaire that's saying the future is a deflationary future. And by deflation, that's the opposite of inflation. We know there's not much evidence of inflation today.
We are in a deflationary cycle. There's this entire shadow banking system that goes unreported. And that was the system that shrank in 2008. And according to the Fed's own figures, it shrank by $5 trillion.
Shadow banking system, what is it?
It's non-bank. It's the
Goldman
non-bank
Sachs.
System. It was the Goldman Sachs until they became a bank. But it includes investment banks, hedge funds, money market funds. This whole system, supposedly it developed, or one reason it's so big is that big institutional investors don't want to put their money in a bank because they're only insured for $250,000 and they have far more than that. Mm-hmm. So they want something that's like a bank. They want to be able to pull their money out daily. So that's the whole repo market, where it's like a big pawn shop where they say, I'll give you money, my money for a day, and you give me those mortgage-backed securities. But I can give you back the mortgage-backed securities, and you have to give me back my money tomorrow if I want it. And that's what happened in 2008, that the money market collapsed. All the investors panicked, and they pulled their money out at once, overnight. So it's a very unstable system. It shrank by $5 trillion suddenly, and it's only come up by $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm. And if this continues, again, this is the paradox of thrift, the liquidity crisis, or the death spiral, all under the rubric deflation.
Right.
Is there a way out of it?
Inflate the system. Put some money back into it.
Force some lending is what...
Yeah, well, I just wrote an article on student debt would be a very nice way to get another $1 trillion into the system. There's now $1 trillion in student debt outstanding. When the Federal Reserve did its quantitative easing one, what they did was $1.3 trillion in mortgage-backed securities, or toxic assets, were mm-hmm. bought off the books of the banks. So the banks got the dollars and the Fed got the toxic assets.
Bought them at face value?
No, actually, they got a deal on it. The Fed actually made money on that deal, even though everybody said that...
But isn't that going to contract the economy? If you mark to market, basically, that means that the reserve limits or reserve requirements aren't met. The lending amount that banks can make contracts.
That's the whole point. They gave them dollars.
Right.
So now they didn't have toxic assets on their books. They now had dollars on their books, so they could lend again, theoretically. It didn't work, obviously.
Right.
And for another reason, I think it's because...
Neither did it help America refinance their home program either.
But the Fed did it, so they could just as well buy $1 trillion in asset-backed securities backed by student loans and then just rip them up.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be another $1 trillion in the system, and the students would basically get free higher education, which I think we should have been giving all along.
But that's a hidden tax on the American public, isn't it?
No, not if you're in a deflationary cycle. If things worked really well when we had $5 trillion more in the system and we suddenly took that $5 trillion out, we've got to put some more money back in there. Now the question is how to do it. They tried doing it by putting it on the books of the banks and it didn't work because there's still $1.6 trillion in excess reserves sitting on the books of the Wall Street banks, not the local banks. The local banks can't get it. It's the Wall Street banks.
Right.
So what if we gave $1 trillion to the municipal governments or the states? It would only take $200 billion to bail out all the states, to balance the books of all the states.
But
or
do that,
the students.
We have to borrow that money the way the system works today. the present system, we have to borrow that and pay the interest to private interest.
That's what the Treasury would have to do, or the Congress. But the Fed does not have to borrow. They can just issue the money. They have the power.
They have the fiat power to just...
to issue money. And they're looking for
it. And again, I want to make the point here. You say create money, not create debt.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We keep talking about they, we refer to the Fed. Who's doing this? Who are these shadow bankers? Who controls us? Who owns it all?
Well, if you trace it back historically, there were some key players that set this system up and made it work the way it does. But today, people don't really understand the system. They see an opportunity to make money. I mean, all those people on Wall Street are just... think that this is a good way to make money,
and they speculators,
and they just jump in and do it. So they see a hole in the system and they go in and make money off it. It's driven by greed, but right. It's legal greed, and everybody kind of looks up to these rich bankers.
Well, we could fix that though, couldn't we?
We need to change the system.
Yeah.
If you bumped off all the, or if you put in jail all the guilty parties,
the
you wouldn't have
sellers,
fixed the system. And you can't put them in jail because it's not even illegal.
Yeah, but if we made it illegal, that would go a long ways towards fixing some of the problems.
Yeah, that's what you have to do is fix the system.
So it's this amalgam of opportunists, which we'll call speculators. These are people that bet against weak currencies, like George Soros did at one time. What about the central bankers as a group?
Well, Ben Bernanke, for instance, was a professor of economics and just got appointed. I don't see him as somebody who's scheming to... pull off something. Now, I could envision that there are people scheming at the Bank for International Settlements because they have pretty much broken one economy after another by imposing their rules. I mean, the first...
And most people don't even know what the Bank of International Settlements is.
No, they were kept a low profile for a long time until they decided they wanted a bigger building and they built this boot, you know, the famous boot in Basel. The Bilderbergers are clearly a they. They meet once a year, and they are...
Can we get the membership of the Bilderberg group?
There are infiltrators who report on it, but it's not nothing's official on that, but they see people going in and out.
Are there Rothschilds that we can look to and say that, you know, they are the spider that crossed the Atlantic?
Nobody really knows how much money they have or what they're up to, but you couldn't really nail them.
To some extent, aren't we really touching on a dicey issue here of class war, the 99% versus the 1%?
Yeah, but so to me, the solution would be to set up our own system. I mean, we can't really get them. What we need to do is set up a model that works better, set up a better mousetrap, and then everybody will just gravitate to that one. And then when we realize that the too big to fails are not too big to fail, let them fail. We have our own more functional system.
Well, that's interesting because I'd like to hear how you would solve the problem. We know that there's a deflationary threat out there. We need to get the system going. And the social contract seems to be broken. We see pensions under attack, health guarantees, health care guarantees under attack. Even Social Security, Medicare is under attack because there are insufficient resources there for that. Didn't Greece just sell off an island?
Could be.
They imposed some austerity on
right,
Greece
right,
in the terms of taking the treasures, those antiquities.
Yeah, and they're threatening to actually put in a military... like a police force that will enforce this. They're going to take over those governments. They've abandoned their sovereignty because of debt.
This could be America's future without some austerity program if we don't find a solution.
Yeah, well, it would be stupidity on our part if we let it happen to us because we do have the power. Our central bank has the power to issue money, and it should be issuing money and lending it to the government. But because... we have this whole faction that's refusing to allow the debt to expand. We have an artificial austerity being imposed on ourselves that we don't need to impose because we can fix it.
So it would be good if the debt the debt cap were removed and that we grew the economy through debt.
Exactly, yes. Because you need a certain amount of money in the system. All money comes from debt. When private debt shrinks, public debt has to expand to fill up the gap. So you want the money supply to match the GDP. So if you want the GDP to expand, you have to expand the money supply.
Doesn't everyone know that our debt will never be repaid, and we're even faced with a problem now of servicing the debt? The interest on the debt, rather.
Yeah, well, it's the servicing that's the problem. If you got rid of the interest and you just allowed the debt to expand as needed.
So going forward, we get rid of paying interest on debt, and then we deal with the debt and the interest that we have now by growing the economy.
Yeah, what you could do, ideally, everybody thinks this would be inflationary, but I would argue it's not, is you could print or coin. You could do this right now without changing any laws. Coin 14 $1 trillion coins, put them in the Treasury's bank account with the Fed, and just buy back all those bonds and rip them up. So all the current bondholders would now have dollars instead of all a bond is, a federal bond is just an interest-bearing account with the Fed, and a dollar is a non-interest-bearing account. So you'd get rid of the interest in that way.
So instead of borrowing, we just fiat the money into creation. I believe it was Thomas Edison that you quoted in your book that if we can create a dollar bond, we can create a dollar bill, which is basically the argument that you're making right there. What about the constitutional authority over the currency? Is the Constitution specific about where that prerogative lies?
Well, that itself is controversial, and there are cases going both ways. It's been argued for 200 years, but the Constitution says Congress shall have the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. Now, the argument, the gold bug types say, well, that just means that you can take your coins to the mint and Congress will put the stamp on it. That's what coining money means. The other argument is that coins were the official money at that time, and they didn't have checks and credit cards and all this stuff. So what they meant was Congress shall have the power to create the money supply, that you have to read that into it to meet the current circumstances 200 years later.
Debt into dollars, which is what you recommend. We can regulate all of this financial engineering. We can take back our money supply from private banking selfish interests, which has been basically the root of the class war for the whole time of our republic.
Right.
Ellen, I want to thank you for a very, very enlightening and interesting talk on the economy. There are many things I didn't know. I have an MBA, and I didn't know so many things about our economy. Yeah. Well, I've got full faith and credit in a lot of the really sensible, down-to-earth, and very simplified banking proposals that you made. And again, I want to thank you for being my guest on Moral Politics. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks, Phil.